and welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2018 season. The notes I'm reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony on Friday and Saturday, April 27th and 28th at 8 p.m. in Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh, and Sunday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Wilson Center, Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington. This concert will be conducted by Grant Llewellyn. The featured guests will be performers from the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, directed by Carl Forsman. The score for tonight's performance includes selections from the following works: Romeo and Juliet, Opus 64 by Sergei Prokofiev, Romeo and Juliet, Opus 56 by Dmitri Kabalevsky, Nymphaea by Kaija Saariaho, Waltz from Symphony Fantastique, Opus 14 by Hector Berlioz, The Walk to the Paradise Garden from A Village, Romeo and Juliet by Frederick Delius, Chrysanthemums, SC 65 by Giacomo Puccini, Tapiola, Opus 112 by Jean Sibelius, Scene d'Amour from Romeo and Juliet, Opus 17 by Hector Berlioz, Company by Philip Glass, Chamber Symphony in C Minor, Opus 110A by Dmitri Shostakovich, Cantus in Memory of Benjamin Britten by Arvo Pärt, and Liebestod from Tristan and Isolde by Richard Wagner. These works may not be exactly performed in this order. There will be an intermission in the middle of the program. By the way, the April 27th concert is made possible in part by Chip and Judy Anderson in honor of the North Carolina Symphony musicians and staff. First, some information about Carl Forsman. Carl Forsman is a member of the faculty and has served as dean for the School of Drama at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. He previously collaborated with the North Carolina Symphony and Grant Llewellyn for semi-staged productions of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream in 2015 and Gilbert and Sullivan's The Pirates of Penzance in 2017. Now I'm going to read from the program notes of this very exciting production of Romeo and Juliet by the North Carolina Symphony. First, the notes written by Byron Woods, Romeo and Juliet reinvented, just as we should expect. Here's a prologue. Two households, both alike in dignity. In fair Verona, where we lay our scene, from ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil bands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured piteous overthrows do with their death bury their parent strife. The fearful passage of their death marked love and the continuance of their parents' rage, which, but their children's end, naught could remove, is now the 2 hours' traffic of our stage, the which, if you with patient ears attend, what here shall miss, our toil shall strive to mend. Why do artists and audiences return again and again to plays now more than four centuries old? The question is particularly pertinent for Romeo and Juliet. Scholar Jill Levinson notes that it has inspired both the largest and the most diverse collection of adaptations of any of William Shakespeare's works. The famous tale of star-crossed lovers has been transformed into more than 20 operas, 10 ballets, 23 films, innumerable theatrical adaptations, including a legendary Broadway musical, and the new work that you're about to experience in this performance from the North Carolina Symphony. It is entirely fitting that Grant Llewellyn, music director of the North Carolina Symphony, and Carl Forsman, a faculty member, stage director, and former dean of drama at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, have created a fusion of genres in this musical and theatrical retelling. Shakespeare's text itself was a groundbreaking synthesis, one of the first works to prove that romance was a subject appropriate for tragedy. It's also easy to forget the degree to which the script integrated tragedy with comedy. Researchers have identified at least 175 jokes scattered through the text, reinforcing the conclusion that until its third act, Romeo and Juliet is primarily a romantic comedy. Like any romance, it has to start as a comedy, Forsman notes. The classic line is that Mercutio's the star a comedy, and then he dies. Shakespeare had to kill him off because he was taking over the play and making it too much fun. The symphony's production of Romeo and Juliet is also a fusion of genres, marrying words from the end of the 1500s with music composed during the 19th and 20th centuries. In fact, there is no departure from the artistic process Shakespeare employed while writing Romeo and Juliet. Lest we forget, the play is largely a dramatization of Arthur Brooks' earlier epic poem, The Tragical History of Romeo and Juliet. And the source materials for that work extend from the partially autobiographical writings of Italian soldier Luigi da Porto and poet Masuccio Salernitano back to Dante, Boccaccio, the Decameron, and Ovid's Metamorphoses. In each of those texts, an artist has looked back at a work that came before seeking something new, a new insight, a new interpretation in something old. For Llewellyn and Forsman, it is the prospect of a compelling new genre in performance that drives them on. Grant often says that we're creating a new art form, Forsman notes, and I do think there's truth to that, as grandiose as it may sound. We're trying to make something that is neither a concert nor a play, something different than either of them. Romeo and Juliet is Llewellyn's second such endeavor with the North Carolina Symphony. His first project in the same vein of play and concert hybrid was the immensely successful production of A Midsummer Night's Dream in 2015, also conceived with Forsman. So how does one merge two fundamentally different art forms simultaneously on the same stage? The cheeky answer is carefully, Forsman notes. There are times when the music is telling the story, and times where the language is taking the show. Moment by moment, you're choosing which takes the lead. Grant and I get into a really fun dialogue about how that balance works, where the orchestra comes forward, and where the language needs to be supported, trying to figure out where we need to be for whatever's happening in the storytelling. That will be evident from the first moments of their creation, in which the music of Prokofiev supplants the text surrounding Romeo and Juliet's opening brawl. We'll do all the storytelling Shakespeare does, Forsman says, but we'll do it visually and musically. Technical challenges are an inevitable part of such a collaboration. A gifted sound designer is crucial to the effort to balance the actors' voices with their musical collaborators. Then comes the prospect of playing scenes on a stage 80 feet wide, but only 12 feet deep. Wait until we've got 12 people sword fighting on that strip, within a few feet of priceless instruments, Forsman chuckles. It's going to be incredible. As a director, Forsman returns to the theme of youth as he considers Shakespeare's text. In so many ways, Romeo and Juliet is about the follies and dangers and risks and excitement of being a young person, he says. Another aspect of our contemporary lives, the never-ceasing pressure of time, is also reflected in this ancient text. In Shakespeare's script, Romeo and Juliet meet, fall in love, and marry within 24 hours. Time pushes them as disastrous events overtake and outstrip their relationship. Within 4 days, both are dead, victims of the violent immaturity in an immature culture. Once again, we watch as old hatreds take their greatest toll on the young. A difficult lesson, and one that is sure to be repeated and retold through art in ever-evolving ways over the centuries that follow. Now, here are the notes from the program written by Joseph and Elizabeth Kahn, entitled Resonating Across Centuries, Music to Enhance Romeo and Juliet. In Tudor and Stuart England, there were no copyright laws. As soon as the ink dried on Shakespeare's plays, they came into the public domain to be copied, produced, translated, amended, and adapted in ways the bard could never have imagined, sometimes in ways that would have had him turn over in his grave. The French were among the worst offenders. Incensed that Shakespeare had violated the Aristotelian unities of place, time, and action, not to mention mixing comedy with tragedy, they at first refused to even consider producing the plays. But by the 18th century, they grudgingly bolderized them into translation. Romeo and Juliet escape the clan warfare of Verona and live happily ever after in Mantua. As late as the 20th century, Leningrad's Kirov Ballet, which commissioned Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, rejected it, also demanding a happy ending, which the composer refused to provide. Only after a hugely successful premiere abroad did the Kirov relent. Of all of Shakespeare's plays, Romeo and Juliet continues to have the greatest resonance across the centuries. It has been transformed into opera, ballet, symphonic tone poem, Broadway musical, and film, in each instance gaining new perspective and insight, although often losing the original text. Music is an integral component in Shakespeare's comedies, with songs performed by clowns such as Fest in Twelfth Night, co-starred in Love's Labour's Lost, and Touchstone in As You Like It. While the histories and tragedies are richly populated by fools, they are not singing fools. As a tragedy, Romeo and Juliet has no music of its own, even at the Capulet Ball, where one might expect it. Nevertheless, the particularly romantic practice of enhancing spoken drama, not just Shakespeare, with incidental music, opened up all sorts of possibilities, most famously in Mendelssohn's incidental music for A Midsummer Night's Dream. For this adaptation with the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, the North Carolina Symphony has selected a variety of pre-existing musical excerpts as incidental music to provide atmosphere and an emotive dimension to the play, transcending period and musical style. In support of Shakespeare's drama, the orchestral selections provide a high-quality score as intra-act accompaniment to the action or background to the dialogue. Romeo and Juliet has inspired so much great music from so many of our finest composers that we knew we would be spoilt for choice here, says North Carolina Symphony Music Director Grant Llewellyn. However, we were not looking just for beautiful concert music to reflect the play, but needed to get the right balance of words and music so as to enhance the play rather than distract from it. Most of the music has been excerpted from works specifically relating to the play. Berlioz's symphonic poem, Romeo et Juliet, Prokofiev's ballet, Frederick Delius's opera A Village, Romeo and Juliet, and Dmitri Kabalevsky's incidental music. Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique and Richard Wagner's Tristan and Isolde reference other star-crossed romances. Some selections have gone way off the beaten path, as Llewellyn says, bearing no direct relationship to the play, but supplying mood and atmosphere for the action. For example, the production employs a single leitmotif, a recurring musical idea, exclusively for Friar Lawrence, a canzone by Renaissance composer Giovanni Gabrieli, music that would have been familiar to the Montagues and the Capulets. Drastically shifting the musical style back to that of Shakespeare's era provides an air of religious gravitas to the friar's character. I am confident that the strength of Shakespeare's drama will carry any combination of styles, proclaims Llewellyn. But then, as a Brit, I would say that. The selections include well-known works repurposed for this production. Listeners may be surprised to hear excerpts from Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet serving different functions from those in the original ballet. The prologue, for example, which accompanies the first street fight between the Montagues and the Capulets in Act I, is taken from a crucial scene in the ballet's second act, in which Romeo kills Juliet's cousin Tybalt. The Capulet ball is accompanied by the waltz from Berlioz's Symphonie Fantastique, allowing for the added allusion to the composer's infatuation and stormy marriage to English Shakespearean actress Harriet Smithson. The final scene incorporates the Liebestod from Tristan and Isolde, in which Isolde's death over Tristan's body parallels Juliet's, although the circumstances of the two tragedies are quite different. In Carl Forsman, we are blessed with a fantastic director who completely gets the unique marriage of words and music we are presenting. With Carl, we have tried to identify the key dramatic moments, many of which need no help from the music, but others of which we felt would work well with the orchestral contribution, says Llewellyn. This is necessarily a delicate process as we refine a fascinating new art form. You've been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2018 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will remain available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thanks for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.